Jai Anantakotivaishna Vrindaki Jai Namacharya Shalahari Astakura Ki Jai Prem Shiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shri Dwaita Gadadha Shvasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamai Jumna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanandam. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskutyade Satare. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Puram Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chubishchaki Vasindaviya Vatapaditanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavam Mohanva Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
October 30th, 2017, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26. The Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, Text 43. Kledanam pindanam tripti.
Kledanam pindanam tripti.
Prananapyanyanondanam.
Prananapyanyanondanam.
Tapapano dobhuyastvam.
Tapapano dobhuyastvam.
Ambasovrit. Tayas trimaha.
Kledanam.
Moistening.
Pindanam.
Coagulating.
Triptihi.
Causing satisfaction. Pranana.
Prana.
Maintaining life.
Maintaining life.
Apyayana.
Apyayana.
Refreshing.
Refreshing.
Undanam.
Undanam.
Softening.
Softening.
Tapa.
Tapa.
Heat.
Heat.
Apanodaha.
Apanodaha.
Driving away.
Driving away.
Bhuyastvam.
Bhuyastvam.
Being in abundance.
Being in abundance.
Ambashaha.
Ambashaha.
Of water.
Of water.
Vrittayaha.
Vrittayaha.
The characteristic functions.
The characteristic functions.
Two.
Two.
In fact.
In fact.
Imaha.
Imaha.
These.
These.
Muted.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The characteristics of water are exhibited by its moistening other substances, coagulating various mixtures, causing satisfaction, maintaining life, softening things, driving away heat, incessantly supplying itself to reservoirs of water, and refreshing by slaking thirst. Purport. Starvation can be mitigated by drinking water. It is sometimes found that if a person who has taken a vow to fast takes a little water at intervals, the exhaustion of fasting is at once mitigated. In the Vedas, it is also stated, Apo mayaha pranaha, life depends on water. With water, anything can be moistened or dampened. Flour dough can be prepared with a mixture of water. Mud is made by mixing earth with water. As stated in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, water is a cementing ingredient of different material elements. If we build a house, water is actually the constituent in making the bricks. Fire, water, and air are the exchanging elements for the entire material manifestation, but water is most prominent. Also, excessive heat can be reduced simply by pouring water on the heated field. Clay danam pindanam triptihi pranan apyayano danam tapa nam odobhu shastvam ambaso vrittayas twimaha. The characteristics of water are exhibited by its moistening other substances, coagulating various mixtures, causing satisfaction, maintaining life, softening things, driving away heat, incessantly supplying itself to reservoirs of water, and refreshing by slaking thirst. So every verse in the Bhagavatam is meant to bring us to God. All Kaitava Dharma, all cheating religion, is thrown out of the Bhagavatam. So a verse like this is fulfilling the injunction of the Ishopanishad that one should know sambhutam and asambhutam, one should know sat and asat, one should know the temporary nature of this world, and one should know the eternal. But the purpose in knowing both is to increase one's devotion. So the reason that this verse is here is not simply a science lesson. I mean, it's certainly a science lesson, and all branches of knowledge can come from this Bhagavatam. It's like we have some devotees who teach their children based entirely or almost entirely on the Bhagavatam. So that's certainly possible. At the same time, the purpose of this verse is to make us more devoted to the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, in speaking on this verse, emphasizes almost completely triptihi and tapa, causing satisfaction, and he talks about how Krishna is really the one who causes satisfaction. Interestingly enough, in that lecture, Srila Prabhupada discusses how everyone has some religion in this world. Every society has some religion. Frankly, we have to be very frank, even science has become a kind of religion. It has its priests, it has its creeds of beliefs that are not based on anything but faith and hearing from authority. It has its rituals and so forth. And science has become a kind of religion to explain the origin of the universe, the purpose of life, how one should act, what are moral principles, and so forth. So animal society does not have this. You don't see animal societies having some philosophy of identity, philosophy of creation and the purpose of life. But that exists in all human societies. And Srila Prabhupada was saying that we're suggesting that everybody chant Hare Krishna. But if you have some other religion, or if you claim to have no religion, and you don't want to chant Hare Krishna because you think it's some sectarian name, he said, then you can understand God through water. Now, this idea of understanding God through water is not only for people who don't have any religion, or who don't want to take up some religious ritual, but it's really for everyone. And we discuss a lot in our society of devotees nowadays about how we can bring Krishna consciousness beyond people who associate themselves with Hinduism or with India. How can we bring, we often say Western, of course, Prabhupada, Pranamanta Paskacha Desha Tarni, to the Western world. But we want to bring Krishna consciousness to people who are neither Indian Hindus nor Westerners also. We want to bring Krishna consciousness to people in Peru and in Russia and in China and so forth. So how does one bring consciousness of Krishna there? Well, one way is to become conscious of Krishna through the elements we interact with in everyday life, and one of them is water. And Prabhupada is mentioning here that water is very prominent. It's, what does he say here? Water is most prominent. He says the fire, water, and air are the exchanging elements, but water is most prominent. It's the cementing ingredient, what holds everything together. We will also argue it is what gives all kinds of this triptihi, of this satisfaction. So why are we advised to meditate on God or to find God through a material element such as water? Well, if you tell people, you know, immediately meditate on Krishna's transcendent pastimes, first of all, most people don't know those pastimes. And you have to first after you hear about those pastimes, they have to read about them, they have to be instructed upon them. And then second of all, I think most of us find that even if we have heard these pastimes of Krishna, even if our living space is filled with pictures of these pastimes of Krishna, still we tend to have our minds and hearts absorbed in our day-to-day activities. Even if those day-to-day activities are directly or indirectly relating to preaching Krishna consciousness, often it seems difficult to remember the form of the Lord or to remember the pastimes of the Lord in his transcendent realm. And because we're already absorbed in the things of this world, the idea is take that absorption that we already have and make it to be about Krishna, because it actually already is about Krishna. Or have us become aware that what we are already absorbing our consciousness in is in fact only Krishna's energy and Krishna. And from there, it's much easier to segue to meditating on Krishna in the spiritual world. Also, the Lord and his devotees, especially Mahaprabhu and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, Bhaktivinoda, Srila Prabhupada, they didn't want us to become a recluse. They didn't want us simply to become a bhajananandi. They wanted us to function in the world. I think about Bhishma. It said that Bhishma, who was expert in thousands of subjects and fought on thousands of battlefields with thousands of men, that this is our situation. We have thousands of topics that occupy our mind. You know, I have a long to-do list, and as soon as I cross off most of the things on the to-do list, I have to start another to-do list. As soon as I empty my inbox, it immediately fills up again. This is the nature of the world. You wash the laundry, and there's immediately, again, dirty laundry. And you clean the floor, immediately, again, the floor is dirty. So we have constantly things to do in this world, whether we're doing them for our bodily maintenance or for our service. And we're not asked to give up the world. It's not suggested that we just simply go to the Himalayas and we go into trance and we stop breathing like Dhruva Maharaj, but that we do work in the world. Mam anusmaram yujyatya. So for those two reasons, first of all, because our consciousness tends to flow towards matter. It tends until we're at the stage of ashakti, which is almost bhava, our mind tends to flow towards matter. Even if we're at nishta and ruchi, which are practically speaking Brahma-Bhuta, liberated, our mind still tends to flow towards matter. So since our mind is flowing towards matter, we should see matter in relationship to Krishna. Use the natural flow of our mind as a segue to Krishna. And the other reason is that even if we're at a very high stage of devotional service, we're recommended to be working in the world at whatever stage we're at. And if we're going to be working in the world, the things in the world should remind us of Krishna. So that's on a personal level, and on a preaching level, we can help people become Krishna conscious in this way. We don't have to present Krishna consciousness as a different religion. Now you have to convert to another religion. Nor do we even have to present, and Prabhupada was saying this in this lecture, he said, if you're not willing to do any of the practices of Krishna consciousness, you can connect to the Lord through water. And this is something anybody can accept. You know, anybody. And as you connect with the Lord through water, or any of the elements, but today we're talking about water, so as you connect with the Lord through water, then naturally you become purified and you will start taking up some sort of bona fide sadhana. So let's see, let's go through this and see how we can connect with the Lord through water. I should mention that I wrote a series of articles in Back to Godhead and connecting with the Lord through the different elements. And the first one I wrote was about water. And that started when I was in a swimming pool in London. I was invited there by the Lake Kalangana. And as I was swimming in the water, I was chanting the Maha Mantra. And as I was swimming and chanting, I was thinking, oh, water is very strong, but it's also very soft. And I thought, oh, that's like Krishna. He's very strong and he's very soft. And then I started thinking of all the ways that the qualities of water reminded me of Krishna's qualities or reminded me of Krishna's pastimes. So let's look here at the list of qualities. This is an incomplete list, but let's look at the list of qualities in this verse. and see how they remind us of Krishna. So the first one we're going to take is the one that Srila Prabhupada concentrated on almost exclusively in his lecture on this verse, and that is triptihi, causing satisfaction. So we all know that when we are thirsty, that water is very satisfying. Prabhupada writes in the purport that water can satisfy even a person who's starving. Of course, not permanently, but it can temporarily satisfy a person who's starving. And a number of people who are trying to lose weight have found that many times what they're identifying as hunger is actually thirst, and that they can satisfy their so-called hunger by drinking water. So in this, in reality, Krishna is the only satisfaction. Prabhupada in his lecture references the story of Dhruva, who had far more material desires than most of us have. Most of us don't want to run the universe. I mean, really, most of us don't. Most of us don't want to be the president of our country even. We don't want that kind of responsibility. But Dhruva wanted it. He wanted to have a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma, greater than the universe even. He had such big material desires, the biggest material desires, one could say. But he was satisfied on seeing the Lord. As soon as he saw the Lord with devotion, not just that he saw the Lord, but as soon as he felt some devotion for the Lord, because there are demons who see the Lord and they don't respond like this. But as soon as he decided, I want to devote myself to the Lord, then he was satisfied. He didn't care anymore whether he had a kingdom. He had been motivated by vengeance towards his stepmother and half-brother. And as soon as he felt devotion for the Lord, he didn't care for vengeance. He no longer saw the world in terms of friends and enemies. He felt naturally forgiving. He was fully satisfied. And I think many times devotees misunderstand what is our process for getting free of material desires. It's not repression, it's not suppression, it's not aversion, but it's satisfaction. Param drishtva nivartate. We're satisfied. No, we give up meat, fish, and eggs because we're satisfied taking prasadam. Not just because we've seen some horrific picture from a slaughterhouse, but we actually feel satisfaction in the food that we get. We give up intoxication because we're satisfied with the kirtan, losing ourselves in the kirtan, coming to a higher stage of consciousness in the kirtan and in japa and in the books. And we've given up gambling because we're satisfied with an honest livelihood, with whatever comes to us by working honestly. And we give up illicit sex because we feel so satisfied bringing the Lord together with his internal energy and experiencing their happiness in the Adiras. So we give up these things because we have a higher taste, not because we're suppressing them, or even because we're meditating on how awful they are. You know, when Jamunacharya says he spits at sex life, that doesn't mean that he's just meditating on the fact that, the actual fact that sex is rather gross. You know, if you tell children, I mean, I remember when I was a child and someone told me about sex and I went, ew! But it's not that. It's not that Jamunacharya is just thinking like that, that, oh, this is some, you know, gross bodily fluids. But he's just saying, why would I want that? Why would I want that when I have something that is so much better? It's exactly like if there's a huge feast. Of course, today's Ekadasi, so. But anyway, not to disturb anybody. But, you know, suppose there's a huge feast and you have pakoras with chutney and, you know, really nicely spiced mung bean dal and cashew rice and sandesh, whatever food you all like, pizza. And someone comes and says, oh, here's some two-day-old dried-out bread. You go, ooh, yeah, why would I want that? And it's not that it's not that you're disgusted with it because you're repressing, but you just see that it's not palatable. The ghastly rasa, one becomes disgusted with sense gratification in a kind of ecstasy. You know, in a kind of ecstasy. When someone's in love, they may find all other people unattractive. So Krishna satisfies us. And why does Krishna satisfy us? Well, if you think about the way that water satisfies us, you know, every time we drink water and we feel that satisfaction, Or Prabhupada will sometimes say any liquid. Sometimes Prabhupada will say the alcoholics can meditate on this principle when they're drinking alcohol even. But whenever we drink any liquid, particularly water, and we feel the sense of satisfaction, right? It's immediately there. You just feel satisfied. Oh, now I am satisfied. I don't want anything else. Of course, materially, that's momentary. But that's ultimately what we get from Krishna. And why is that? Because Krishna is the source. Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam prabhate iti madhva bhajante mam buddhabhava samanvita. He's the source of everything. Everything's coming from him. Everything's contained within him. And as soon as we are connected with him, we have everything. And just like, you know, to someone like Bill Gates, $45,000 is equivalent to 10 cents for most of us. You know, for most people, if you say, oh, I'll give you $45,000, wow. But for Bill Gates, it's insignificant. It doesn't even require his attention. Right? Because he has so many billions of dollars that, you know, $45,000, it's meaningless. So Krishna is everything. When you have everything, then you have everything. There's no feeling of need. There's no feeling of want. Right? Someone like Bill Gates, or what's his name? Bezos, head of Amazon. You know, they're not thinking, I have to work to earn money. They're not feeling this atripta. Of course, sometimes it says the characteristics of those in the mode of passion, particularly the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, is that they always feel atripta. They always feel dissatisfied. But the principle is still there. If you have something, you don't, there's no hankering for something. You've just eaten a full meal. You're satisfied. So Krishna is that fullness. Om purnamadha purnamidam purna purnat udachate purnasya purnam adaya purnam eva vasishchate. He is the complete. And any time we drink water, we can meditate. This satisfaction is the complete. It's a little indication of the complete. So then we have this moistening, kledana, moistens everything. And it's interesting that Krishna says, rasoham apsukante, I am the taste of water. We call it taste, it's rasa. Rasa is a very difficult word to translate. In that verse, Prabhupada translates it as taste. The Nectar Devotion translates it as relationship. The rasa of water. So rasa is the ultimate purpose for anything. As Prabhupada so beautifully explains in the preface to the Nectar Devotion, everything that we do, everything, the smallest to the biggest, our everyday routines, which we don't think about very much, and our huge plans, they're all a searching for rasa, some combination of the five and primary and seven secondary rasas, which are described as the relationship, the impetus for that relationship, the voluntary behavior to solidify that relationship, the automatic behavior that solidifies the relationship or expresses the relationship, and the waves of emotion within the relationship. So rasa exists on physical. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there's three levels of rasa. There's physical, emotional, and spiritual. But all of them have to do with this quality of moistening, which Srila Prabhupada spends quite a bit of time on in this admittedly short purport. Anything can be moistened or dampened. So if you just have a bunch of flour, you're not going to be interested to eat it. But if you take the flour and mix it with water, just flour and water, and then as soon as you heat just flour and water, you have a chapati. Right? Or even without cooking, you can take the wheat berries, the wheat seeds, and just by soaking them in water, they'll sprout and you can immediately eat them. You can make buildings by mixing things with water. You know, or even if you make something out of trees, so the trees, of course, have been drinking water. So, but in terms of happiness, this moistening principle, this rasa of moistening, kledanam, is essential. If we think about any of our senses, we will understand that there is water. So think about the tongue. The tongue has liquid on it, has saliva. And I don't remember how old I was, 5 or 6 or something. We did an experiment in school where we took a paper towel, we dried off our tongue, and then we put sugar on our tongue or salt on our tongue or different dry ingredients, and we weren't able to taste them. So without liquid, there's no taste sensation. There has to be liquid. And the same is true for all of our senses. If our skin is dry, then it becomes painful. And if we want to have the pleasurable touch, you know, of some soft, smooth fabric on our skin, or soft cushions, or a touch of another body, you know, you're holding your little baby, your sleeping baby, to your chest, and sitting in your rocking chair, and the pleasure of the baby's skin against your skin. So but that pleasure of skin to skin, or cloth, or cushions, or the breeze upon the skin, the pleasure of touch, is only there if the skin is moist. The skin has to have its oils, its liquid. The ears can only hear. We have our wax that's lubricating the ear canal so that it can hear. Our sense of smell, we have, of course, mucus is coating the sense of the nose with the sense of smell. The eyes, one time on an airplane I got dry eye, which was extremely painful. But eyes, you know, without the liquid, how can you see? And this is true for also the working, like digestion, without the liquids in the stomach, the acids and the mucus lining. How can you digest? The brain is also enclosed in liquid. And this lubrication, this moistening effect is there in order to experience rasa. Even on the gross platform, Ayurveda talks about rasa on the gross platform. Any of our pleasures, our gross sensory pleasures, are due to this liquid. And such is true even emotionally. You know, even we use words like this. We say, oh, you know, it's kind of irritating. We say even emotionally, irritating or coarse or rough. Right? Well, I don't know, we're hitting kind of a rough patch in our relationship, or a smooth path, or, you know, our relationship is really flowing. So we use this sort of words even in terms of emotional rasa. And it's certainly there in spiritual rasa. Rupa Goswami talks about a melting heart. And he writes about in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how easily the heart melts. So you have this conception of liquidity in rasa, on the gross and also on the subtle platform. So this moistening, which is represented on the gross platform by water, which in some sort of form, involved in some sort of liquid, is responsible or is the catalyst for every single thing that we call pleasure, is Krishna. And Krishna, of course, is the reservoir of all pleasure. The pleasure we experience, samsparsaja, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, through born of touch, that light touches our retina, that sound touches our eardrum, that the various tastes touch our tongue, and the molecules of odor touch our nose, or some sensation touches our skin, that this samsparsaja, and this is actually Krishna. And Krishna talks about becoming disinterested in the bhoga, the enjoyment of samsparsaja. But the devotee sees the enjoyment of samsparsaja, of touch. Oh, this is Krishna. Like Prabhupada would say, if you're attached to a sunset, you have to return. But if you see the sunset and you say, oh, there's Krishna. There's the beautiful color of Krishna's feet. You know, the dark blue on the top of his feet and the beautiful pink on the bottom of his feet. If you appreciate that touch of the light with your eyes and the liquid in your eyes as Krishna, then one becomes Krishna conscious. So whenever we become aware of the moistening power of liquid, we can immediately think of Krishna coagulating, pindanam, it brings things together. So Krishna, of course, is the all-attractive. And just like water brings things together, attracts things to each other, so Krishna also is has unlimited, all the opulences, Aishwarya and Gyan and Virya and Sri. Vairagya. So Krishna is the ultimate in all of these opulences. And because of that, he attracts everyone. By his attractive feature is what's called gravity, which is very poorly understood by modern science. But Prabhupada says that Krishna is holding the planet together, just like you hold a fistful of dust in your hand, and as soon as you let go, it disappears. He's keeping the planets in orbit through the attracting quality of Sankarsana. Everything is being brought together. Prana, maintaining life. So, of course, the most essential feature for maintaining life is air, and after that is heat, at least for the bodies we have on this earth. But water is certainly one of the very essential features of maintaining life. And Krishna is also the essential feature for maintaining life. In fact, Krishna is the prana. He's joining with the life air. He is air. He is the essential principle of life. He is the life of all that lives. And whenever we are in touch with water, then we're feeling alive through contacting with water, then we can remember Krishna. Of course, pranayama, it's maintaining life. Water maintains life in various ways. Water maintains life through drinking, and in that sense it's subordinate to air and to temperature. But water also maintains life by allowing us to eat. What food could we eat without liquid? Not only could we not taste it, but we couldn't digest it without liquid. Krishna says he's the fire of digestion, but that's a liquid fire. So this water is there for maintaining life on those levels. Water is there also for maintaining life in terms of our health. If we didn't wash our body, if we didn't wash our clothes, if we didn't wash our food, if we didn't clean our environment, then we would be subjected to so many diseases. And whenever we're using water for cleaning, whether, you know, cleaning our body, cleaning our clothes, cleaning our dishes, cleaning our floor, cleaning our furniture, washing off our fruits and vegetables before cooking them, then we can meditate on how water is essential for life. And ultimately, Krishna is the most essential for life. Krishna is pavitram paramam. Krishna is the supreme pure. He is purifying everything. Om pavitra pavitra va savastaham gatopi va yad smarat pundarikaksham ya bayam yantara suci. Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. Even if you are apavitra, even if we are impure, all of us in this material world are more or less impure, especially we earthlings on this planet in the Kali Yuga. Who of us can say that we are pure? And it would be a lot of hubris to say that we are pure. But even if we are very impure, even if we are the most impure, even if we are murderers like Jagai and Madhai, or if we delight in causing pain to others like Magrari, even if we are at that level of evil, still one who remembers the lotus-eyed Lord becomes immediately pure. So just like, you know, even the dirtiest place, if you have enough clean water, then you can clean it. And I remember once staying in a room in some temple. I was given a room to stay, and I thought that the floor was discolored. But upon applying some effort and water to it, I saw that it was simply dirty. And in the same way, if you apply enough water to something, you'll get it clean. And if we apply enough Krishna consciousness, enough chanting, enough prasadam, enough worship, enough bhagavatam, then the most impure will become pure. Softening, undanam, to make something soft. So this is water softens things. Even rock. Drops of water will wear away stones. Even the hardest things, water will eventually soften them. So in the same way, whenever we see the softening power of water, then we can remember how Krishna is softening our heart, our steel-framed heart. Again, you know, this is our general condition, our default value in the Kali Yuga is to be very hard-hearted, to be very selfish, to be very very manipulative, to use emotions just for selfish manipulation, and not actually to be caring and loving persons. But Krishna, just like water, Krishna can soften our heart and make us actually melt in love. Then we have this tapa apanodaha, driving away heat. So this word tapa is very interesting. Tapa means heat, and it also means suffering. And of course we have the word tapa. Tapa, which is related, means voluntary austerity. So we take up, it's to get rid of involuntary suffering. We take up voluntary suffering. But this driving away heat also means driving away misery. So, kleshagni, this is to burn, of course that's a different one, to burn up the kleshas. But this idea that even in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we can feel relief from the miseries. How is it that we feel relief from the miseries? Well, even intellectually, for a very beginning devotee, they understand, I'm not this body, this world has nothing to do with me. There's some sense of detachment, even if it's only on an intellectual and philosophical basis. Even that amount of detachment helps with misery. And as we progress in Krishna consciousness, that gyan should start becoming vigyan. We should start actually feeling, I don't have anything to do with this. So I told this story before. I was in living in the old Brooklyn Temple, not the present one. It's having this contentious lawsuit, but the old Brooklyn Temple on Henry Street. And one day I was going with one of the other ladies to the subway station to go out to distribute Prabhupada's books. And the subway station was quite a walk from that temple. And the neighborhood at that time was mostly was families, but they were kind of low-class families. And in the summer in New York, in most cities in temperate regions, quite hot because you don't have the sufficient trees to mitigate the weather. You have all the concrete and so forth. And so it's really hot in the city in the summer. And most of the residents, they're too poor to go someplace to find relief by swimming. So what they do is they open up the fire hydrants and they flood the streets. And then the children play in the water that collects between the edge of the street and the sidewalk. But the problem was that in those days, people didn't pick up after their dogs' excrements. And so there was dog stool, there was dog poop all over the streets and the sidewalks. So when they would flood the streets with using the fire hydrants, they were basically creating a big unflushed doggy toilet bowl. And the children were playing in this, and the parents are sitting in their plastic chairs on the sidewalk watching and enjoying. So we're walking past these scenes on our way to the subway. And I turned to my friend and I said, I am so glad I don't live here. And then she looked at me and she said, but you do live here. And all of a sudden I realized I didn't feel that I lived there. I didn't feel that I belonged to the atmosphere. I felt that I was different. I felt that I was above it. I mean, I think I'd been in the movement for 2 or 3 years at that point. So even in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we get some vigyan, we get some realization that I'm not this body, I'm not this mind. These miseries don't belong to me. They don't really have anything to do with me. And at a certain point, we're experiencing that constantly, that I have nothing to do with the miseries, I am simply the observer. We observe the miseries, we observe the natural tendency of the mind to fight against pain, and we simply observe it. And this quality of water to take away the misery of heat, right? Whether it's through your air conditioner or whether it's through going swimming or just taking a shower, reminds us of how Krishna takes away all of our miseries. So this is just some examples. We could have many, many more. As I say, I've written an article on this and I've looked at the qualities of water. It's soft. Krishna is very soft, powerful, very graceful. And like Krishna's graceful, reminds us of Krishna's dancing, that is very soothing, that it's very musical. When Krishna jumped in Kali's lake, he was making music in the water. But water going over rocks is very musical. It's a shelter for the aquatics, like Krishna is a shelter. And then, of course, there's so many pastimes of Krishna that are associated with water. In fact, water in general can remind us of the fact that Krishna is the youthful enjoyer of pastimes. If you think about it, most places that people go in this world, for just relaxation and enjoyment has something to do with water. It's like we're here on Hawaii. People come here not only because it's pleasant temperature all year. It's never too hot or too cold, basically. But they also come here because there's the ocean and the waterfalls and the rivers. Or sometimes people like to go to a place where there's snow. But if you just think about the epitome, the archetype of vacation places, it has something to do with water. So Krishna's always on a vacation. He's always enjoying lila. And he really likes water. You know, he's getting bathed in the morning. He's swimming in the Yamuna. He has so many kunds that he's swimming in. You know, of course, there's Shamakund, Radhakund, but there's so many. Prem Sarovara, there's Apsarakund, there's Navalakund, there's Govindakund, and just on and on and on. And of course, at Dwarka, he's by the ocean. And he's taking another bath. I mean, how many times during the Astakalila Lila is Krishna going swimming or taking a bath? I mean, it is so many times. And so Krishna, water certainly can remind us of Krishna's nature of the enjoyer and very specific pastimes related to water. Of course, we talked about him bathing in the Yamuna, Kaliya in the Yamuna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the Ganga, Varaha going in the ocean. We have Matsya in the ocean, saving the Vedas. We have Kurma in the ocean of milk, who unites the demons and the demigods for a conjoined purpose. And then we have Varaha, who goes into the universal ocean to rescue the earth. We have the creation. Yakarin Arnavajale Bhajatisma Yoga Nidram Mananta Jagadanda Sarama Kupadhar Shakti Mavalambya Param Samurti. So we have the creation where the Lord is lying on the causal ocean or lying on Sesha in the causal ocean. So we have so many, I mean, think of so many pastimes in relationship to water. And water should remind us of these pastimes. Whenever we drink water, we see water, we hear water, we're using water, we can remember. The qualities of water can spark remembrance of Krishna's qualities. It can spark gratitude for Krishna. And can help us remember Krishna's pastimes. And therefore, Prabhupada says, what's the problem? What's the difficulty? To become Krishna conscious is there, even for those who are absorbed in material things. Even for those who say, you know, I just can't remember Krishna's pastimes with the gopis or the cowherd boys. I'm too absorbed in my day-to-day life. Your day-to-day life involves water. And if someone says, well, I don't want to take up a religion, I don't want to chant a religion, think about how God is in water. Or, you know, I'm so busy doing all this service, I wish I could just go to, you know, Vrindavan and just chant. No. This service you're doing for Krishna, you're always contacting water. And again, you can remember Krishna. So we have some time for about 8-9 minutes for questions, comments, additions, subtractions.
Okay, I've unmuted everybody. By the way, today is Ekadashi in Hawaii, and on the mainland, I guess elsewhere, it's tomorrow. Special comments?
First day of Easter March. Last 5 days of March. Very powerful.
Yes, there are certain austerities. The people sometimes do these last 5 days that start starting today.
Can I ask a quick question?
You can ask what you want.
In the purport, it says in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, water is said to be the Samanchi ingredient. Is that Teja Bari Radhanyata? Is that what he's speaking of? In the purport, it says,
yeah,
in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, water is the Samanchi ingredient.
I don't. Where? What Sanskrit are you referring to?
Oh, the first verse, Tejo Vari Mridangata Vinamayo Yatra Tri Sargamasha. So Vari is water. What's he referring to in the purport?
You mean what's he referring to in this verse?
Yes. In the purport he says in the beginning.
Coagulating. Pindanam.
Right, but it says that in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, water is the cementing ingredient.
Oh, I don't know. I say in the beginning of the, I don't know. Sorry. Good research topic. I could see if I have that in a commentary. Anybody else have another question?
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for such a wonderful class. I just couldn't imagine what, you know, how one could actually give a long class about this. It just seemed like, you know, where do you go with this? But
we could talk about this for another, like, 5 hours.
Yeah. Well, I can see that now.
Because you could take each of these qualities of water that's mentioned in this verse, you could take that for, you know, in going into detail about how that's related with Krishna.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's a really nice way to tell others about Krishna, you know.
I believe there's more living entities, at least on our planet, that, you know, that live in water as opposed to land.
Could be.
I'm pretty sure that's true. Back to my old zoology days.
Huh. Okay, I don't find anything. I'm looking at Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. I don't find anything about beginning of Bhagavatam. I have one more place I can look. Anybody else have any question or comment? And I don't see anything from Jiva. Anybody else?
Well, further glorification of the class. I also, when I looked at this, I say, okay, what does this have to do with Krishna? And you've really brought it out. That's just wonderful.
Well, it's interesting you're saying that, because here with our family, we're in our morning program, we're reading about Dhruva Maharaj, and we're just right now reading where Dhruva returns home and the description of the welcome and the description of the capital. And, you know, some of those verses are just describing the opulence of Uttanapada's kingdom and Uttanapada's palace. And again, you can wonder, well, how does this help us become Krishna conscious? You know, what is the deeper meaning here? And you find that you can come up with a lot of them. You know, Prabhupada talks in the purport about comparing that opulence, the natural opulence in those days, to our current concepts of opulence. And we can connect that with Krishna and understanding what kind of, even materially, what does Krishna desire for the living being? How does Krishna desire us to live? The Krishna desires us to live in this actually very naturally opulent life. But it could also be understood in the sense that all of those elements of description were part of the story. They were foreshadowing Dhruva's later ascension to the throne. It was contrasting, you know, if Dhruva had gotten a kingdom better than that of his father or grandfather or great-grandfather, what did that mean? You know, you just read that Dhruva was given the pole star, which was a greater planet, a greater kingdom than that of the whole universe. And then this description of the opulence of Dhruva's father, and wow, he's got something better than that. Vaikuntha is better than that. So if you start from that premise, that every word of the Bhagavatam, every sentence, every verse has the intention of bringing us closer to Krishna. That's its intention. There isn't any other intention. Then you can find multiple ways in which that is the case. And by the way, the same is true of the great acharyas. And the same is true about Srila Prabhupada. That every action and every word has that intention. You know, the intention is, the mood is to bring us closer to Krishna. And when you look for that, you will find that. The particular context of the instruction may not apply to our particular context. I always give the example where Krishna says to Arjuna, stand and fight. So that's a very contextual instruction. It's not a universally applicable instruction in all time and place. but the intention behind the instruction is universally applicable. So if you just look at the word stand and fight, and you say, well, how am I going to give a class on this? What am I going to say about stand and fight? Am I going to tell everybody you're not allowed to lie down anymore? You're not allowed to sit? You're only allowed to stand? And the only activity you're allowed to do is to fight? I mean, what does that mean? But if you go behind it and see what is Krishna's intention, what principles is he tying to? And then you can find those principles and you can tie that to any particular context. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.